From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. A lot coming up on this Wednesday edition, just rushing in from the White House. Question is the World Bank assisting the Chinese in their repression of Uyghurs in China? Asian expert Gordon Chang is here on that story. And no good deed goes unchallenged. Just about an hour ago, while I was in the White House for another meeting, the president signed an executive order designed to combat anti-Semitism on college campuses. The media is taking issue with it. Jessica Ditto, deputy assistant to the president, responds, and we'll also talk about the Trump administration making it a priority for all American families to have access to paid family leave. In fact, there's a summit at the White House on that topic tomorrow. We'll talk about that with Jessica. And speaking of the media, Tyler O'Neill, PJ Media, takes CBS News to task for whitewashing the Southern Poverty Law Center in an effort to prop up the notorious anti-Christian organization. Tyler is here to explain that story. And a public records request reveals a school in Texas knowingly allowed a drag queen adjudicated for prostitution to participate in a drag queen story hour. Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values, has the details. And finally, Travis Weber, FRC's vice president for policy and government affairs, joins me with an update from Capitol Hill. A lot happening in our nation's capital today. All right, Chinese recipients of World Bank loans tried to secure funding for the purchase of facial recognition technology for use in China's northwest region, according to documents that have been obtained by the media. The reason it matters is because the World Bank's loan program in Xinjiang province demonstrates the extreme moral hazard that is now facing any organization with operations in the region, where China has constructed a surveillance state and detained more than a million ethnic minorities. Joining us now with analysis is Gordon Chang, the author of The Coming Collapse of China. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much, Tony.
Now, let me start with a question first so our listeners understand what this is about. The World Bank. Explain to our listeners exactly the role of the World Bank.
Well, the World Bank is a multilateral institution. It's headquartered in Washington, D.C., and it basically dispenses aid around the world, usually in the form of low-interest loans. And China is a recipient of those loans. And even worse, Tony, despite all of what we've learned in the last few days, the World Bank is now extending its China loan program for another 5 years. And that means it's going to be financing about $1.5 billion a year in low-interest loans to China.
And the United States puts about $1.5 billion a year into the World Bank. We're one of the largest supporters of the World Bank. And it's the purpose is to fight poverty and hunger and humanitarian efforts. But we see now that there's evidence that they could be propping up what is happening in this region of China where the Uyghurs are being repressed by the Chinese government.
Well, certainly, because World Bank has been lending money to Xinjiang, that northwestern area, and they extended a $50 million loan in 2015. The Chinese tried to get the World Bank money for facial recognition, as you point out, but there's also now evidence that they were, in fact, able to divert loan proceeds for barbed wire, body armor, and tear gas. Now, the World Bank says that that's unsubstantiated, but other people disagree. But in any event, Tony, once you put money, money is fungible, which means right. Once you put money into that area, you know, they can use it or they can indirectly use it for these evil purposes.
I mean, that's pretty bold, in my view, to go to the World Bank, which is being funded in large part by the United States to alleviate poverty, to request funds to build an infrastructure to repress, to detain, to track ethnic minorities. And that is apparently what has been uncovered in these documents.
Well, certainly. And what China is doing in Xinjiang, which the local inhabitants call Chinese-occupied East Turkestan, is a crime against humanity. there's more than a million, perhaps as many as 3 million ethnic Uyghurs and Kazakhs in concentration camp facilities. We know people are dying in those facilities. China's program is to eliminate ethnic minority identity and religious identity. So this is horrific. This is Third Reich type stuff, as bad as what Germany did prior to the mass exterminations.
Now, the again, going back to the World Bank here for a moment, the United States has a lot of input into the World Bank. There have been some on Capitol Hill that have been critical of the World Bank and its lack of oversight. Senator Chuck Grassley has expressed concerns about the breakdown. Could this lead to greater scrutiny and maybe reforms within the World Bank?
Well, I certainly think so. Now, the World Bank president is traditionally an American, as it is the current president, David Malpass, formerly of the Treasury Department. And clearly, Malpass has been resistant to American suggestions that China not be a recipient of World Bank loans, because this is essentially aid, and China doesn't need this aid. There is going to be more scrutiny, and there will be restrictions, and people are actually calling for defunding of the World Bank. Defunding won't occur, but there will be, I think, probably less in the way of contributions to that institution.
I mean, that was the first thing that comes to mind. I was not really tracking what the Chinese government got from the World Bank. But being that they have one of the world's largest economies and we're constantly in this trade deficit with them, why would we be giving money to the World Bank, which then in turn goes into the hands of the Chinese?
That's a great question, and there's no answer to that. This shouldn't be happening. And remember, this is even worse because there are other World Bank programs for China which are also questionable. And as I mentioned, money is fungible. So when you support China, even with the World Bank proceeds are used for quote-unquote good purposes, that frees up money for China to use for building up its military or other things that people around the world would abhor.
Now, you mentioned this, but I'm going to go back. It was, I think, in 2017, a World Bank spokesman said that one of its partner schools in Xinjiang, the school purchased $30,000 in riot gear and tear gas launchers, which the media did focus on that. What are we doing funding that type of stuff through the World Bank?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that. And I don't think that anybody has an answer for that question, Tony, which is the critical question. It brings into question our relationship with the World Bank and the World's Bank relationships with aid recipients. Because when you start to look at some of these activities, you know, these are things that no multilateral institution should be doing, no institution should be doing. And so, therefore, there will be, as you asked before, there will be greater scrutiny of what's going on and a questioning of our relationship with the World Bank.
Now, part of the funding, Gordon, I know you got to run here just a moment, but part of the funding was they were seeking, which they apparently did not get. Now, the World Bank has said, you know, a lot of these documents are in Chinese, so it's hard to really, you know, filter through them. Well, I would suggest the World Bank take some of that money and hire somebody who's proficient in Chinese. But they were seeking funding for this facial recognition technology, which they're using fairly widely in the Xinjiang province. And this is now apparently there's some reports that this technology is being exported. Are they still developing this technology, or have they already perfected it?
No, they're still developing it. And they do have the help of U.S. companies in doing that. And that's another story about U.S. cooperation with what is an ongoing crime against humanity. You know, the World Bank right now has withdrawn funding from the schools in question. Riot control purposes.
You dropped out there for just a second, Gordon. I know you're heading to do a television interview, so I understand you're maybe in a bad spot. Can you still hear us?
I can still hear you.
Okay. Finish that last thought.
Yeah. The World Bank has withdrawn funding for the schools in question because it can't monitor this stuff. It's now have increased senior monitoring of the World Bank activities in China. It just shouldn't be there in the first place. This is not a question of monitoring. This is a question of whether they should, in fact, be helping China.
Good question. And someone needs to answer that question. I think I know what the answer should be. Gordon Chang. In fact, folks, let me just say this. I follow Gordon. A lot of good information on what's happening in China in particular, but in the Asia region, and very knowledgeable, and it's a lot happening over there. At Gordon Chang is his Twitter handle. That's at Gordon Chang. Gordon, I know you got to run. I want to thank you for joining us, and as always, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. And it's at Gordon G. Chang.
Oh, I missed the G. Gordon G. Chang. Got that, folks? All right, Gordon, great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Tony.
All right, Gordon G. Chang. And he does. He's very knowledgeable on this stuff. In fact, in high demand. So I'm glad he comes on and discusses this with us. Look, this is it's a misuse of our dollars as Americans. I mean, $1.5 billion is about what we put in annually to the World Bank. And what did he say that China was getting? They would get about $1.5 billion. I mean, here we are. We're in a trade deficit with this country. They've got, apparently, I mean, they're trying to create a currency that would usurp the dollar as the international currency. And I mean, this makes absolutely no sense. And I'm sure that this president, more than any other, will get this. So I'm hoping that this story, this revelation that came through these documents that were leaked out of some of these documents. I mean, it's been a process. Documents have been leaked out of China. These are documents from the World Bank, applications for loans. That this is where the media actually does do a good job. Axios was the one that was actually digging through this and found this information. This is the kind of stuff you like to see the media do, digging through records and finding things out, not just, you know, going on TV and talking and calling people names. This stuff is helpful to see how China is benefiting from an international institution designed to alleviate poverty, hunger, that sort of thing. It's to help developing countries. Now, I know that China does have a lot of poverty. But the reason they have poverty is because they're directing so much of their resources into other things to become a, well, I mean, number one, they're a communist country. And while they have a big economy, they still have a lot of poverty. But should we be propping them up? Should we be propping them up so that they can compete with us economically? And most egregiously, is that these funds are being used to repress minorities, religious minorities in the country. This needs to be looked at. All right. When we come back, the president just, I think less than an hour ago, signed an executive order designed to combat anti-Semitism that's taking place on college campuses. Well, this president can't do anything without people criticizing him. We're going to talk about that with Jessica Ditto, deputy assistant to the president. We're also going to talk about tomorrow's summit on paid family leave that will be hosted at the White House. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled, Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Claussen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn.
Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most...
Merry Christmas and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And I've just about caught my breath from running into the studio. About an hour ago, a little over an hour ago, the president signed an executive order designed to combat anti-Semitism on college campuses, which is becoming a huge problem. In fact, it's becoming a global problem. Just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had a meeting with a representative from the United Nations who is tasked with anti-Semitism. And he just finished a report and talked about how it's growing. And one of the issues in looking at anti-Semitism is that it is kind of like the canary in the coal mine. When you see a rise in anti-Semitism, usually behind it is greater religious repression. And we're seeing that worldwide. Well, join me now to talk about that and about a special event, summit coming up at the White House tomorrow and a push for legislation that is going to affect families across America, family paid leave, is Jessica Ditto. She is a deputy assistant to the president. Jessica, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Let's start with, I want to get to the summit and about the paid family leave, which has been the focus for a long time in development at the White House. But I want to first talk about this anti-Semitism, the executive order. Explain to our listeners what the president's executive order will do.
Sure thing. And it was a very special moment in the East Wing of the White House moments ago where the president signed this executive order, and a room filled of supporters and folks who all recognize the importance of this action and the importance of condemning in a holistic and unified way the hate and the rise of anti-Semitism around the world and here in the U.S. So we want to make sure that the message is abundantly clear. And through this executive order, the president is combating anti-Semitism on our campuses head-on to help further fight against the rise of anti-Semitism in the United States. And this order makes it clear that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 applies to anti-Semitic discrimination based on race, color, or national origin, and when enforcing against covered anti-Semitic discrimination, agencies will consider the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism as well as the IHRA's contemporary examples. The president is also directing federal agencies to identify other ways the government can use non-discrimination authorities to address anti-Semitism, and it, the action further demonstrates the unwavering commitment of President Trump and his administration to combating all forms of anti-Semitism. And this is another unique step that this president has taken that's drawing bipartisan support in a very divided time in our in Washington. And we know that this is a moment where we have to rise above all the partisanship and be unified in condemning these horrific acts of violence against Jewish Americans and synagogues in the U.S.
Right. I mean, you know, especially not related to this, but we did see this heinous act yesterday. But the question has been, there's been a lot of unclarity surrounding the application of Title VI to Jewishness, basically because of a question about whether Jewishness is primarily a religion, in which case Title VI would not apply to anti-Semitic discrimination, or whether it's a race and national origin. This executive order clarifies that, in fact, this law applies to anti-Semitic activity.
Exactly. And an executive order is an action a president can take to direct federal agencies to prioritize policy enforcement, the fulfillment of regulations and laws, that a lot of times the federal government is such a huge bureaucracy, a lot of things get pushed aside or just not enforced. But he's making it clear that this is a priority, that this is an order, and that it should be viewed in through this lens and to ensure that anti-Semitism is absolutely covered within the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
And just one final note to make on this, folks, is that the this action, which I applaud, comes at a time when anti-Israel sentiments are strong on many college campuses. And in fact, you know, given rise to the boycott, divestment, and sanctions, the BDS movement against Israel, this is, I mean, this administration has taken several steps. One from the Secretary of State just a couple of weeks ago about the settlements in Israel. But this is another strong message here in America that we're not going to tolerate this. And I applaud the administration for taking these steps.
Absolutely. And thank you for making your listeners aware of this. It is certainly a concern of this administration, when our hearts go out to the families in New Jersey tonight.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Jessica, let's shift gears, because I know there's a lot happening at the White House. I was there on a couple of other topics earlier this afternoon. But tomorrow, the White House will host a child care summit. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. So this administration, from its inception, has focused on the American worker, and in particular through Ivanka's office and through partnerships with the Department of Labor, Department of Commerce, Health and Human Services, we've really focused on policies that will help support working families and provide access to safe, affordable, and more accessible child care throughout the country, as well as to encourage employers and our national federal government to create a better known national strategy around paid leave, so that families have the opportunity to bond in a way that is so essential at the earliest stages of a child's life, and that both parents have the ability to be a part of that those initial stages without penalty or fear of losing their job. And so we've encouraged the private sector on this front. We've also really pushed this on a federal legislative policy front. And tomorrow's discussion will bring private sector, governors, and lawmakers together to have this conversation and release principles to help move this dialogue forward.
And it's being done because it's a very methodical way forward. I know I've been in some of these discussions that it is a pro-family policy in every sense of the word. Jessica, we're out of time, but I want to ask you if you'll come back on maybe tomorrow after the summit and talk about what was accomplished at the summit.
I'd be delighted. And for your listeners, it will be live streamed on the White House website, so feel free to tune in. I'll be glad to come back and talk about these policies and the way we're moving this forward.
Great. Thanks so much, Jessica. Appreciate you being here today. All right, folks, don't go away. Tyler O'Neill with PJ Media is here next. Don't go away. I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. So glad to have you with us. All right. In recent years, liberal activists have used the Southern Poverty Smear Center, Law Center, to launch pressure campaigns demanding that charitable funds blacklist conservative nonprofits. Well, CBS News reported on the latest attack, I guess just last week, focusing on the outrage about Fidelity Investments' charitable gift fund sending money to so-called, quote-unquote, hate groups. But in the story, CBS News whitewashed SPLC's background. The fact that they've been caught up in all of these scandals here recently, that they're discredited as a bigoted, racist organization, that they have been linked in federal court to an act of domestic terrorism. None of this was included in the story. The media continues to prop up this anti-Christian leftist organization because it's a part of their attack campaign to silence conservatives. Joining me now is someone who actually has written an outstanding article on this, kind of explaining what happened. The media, again, buries the truth about the SPLC, Tyler O'Neill, senior editor at PJ Media. Tyler, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, my pleasure. How are you, Tony?
I'm doing quite well. You know, a great article that you put together, one of the best I've seen on SPLC. Were you surprised by how CBS whitewashed the SPLC and their – I'm not talking about their past. I'm talking about their present.
Yeah. No, it was particularly remarkable to see this story. And then I was – you know, FRC forwarded me the statement that – you guys sent to CBS, and seeing how much of that statement was just cut off the record. Like they gave Heidi Barrick, who's one of the SPLC's leading staffers, they gave her about four or five times the amount of words in the story that they gave to Family Research Council. And then they specifically cited, it was funny, it was worse than whitewashing, because if they had whitewashed the Southern Poverty Law Center, if they had said, oh, there's this scandal and, you know, it's nothing to be concerned about, the Southern Poverty Law Center is still reliable, that would be something. But it would not be anything as bad as what they did, because they mentioned the FRC claim that the SPLC is corrupt and can't be relied on as a source. And then they didn't mention anything about any of the scandals. So they made FRC look foolish by including a claim that they were not willing to back up or give any of the evidence for. And, you know, just so your listeners know, FRC sent in four paragraphs with good links, you know, great documentation showing that there is this big scandal there, that the SPLC's co-founder was fired, its president and top lawyer resigned after claims of sexual misconduct and racial discrimination. And then the even bigger, if you ask me, the even bigger revelation that a former employee called it a highly profitable scam, especially referring to the hate group accusations. And it's just, all of this was buried, even though FRC went the extra mile and told CBS News that all this truth is out there. It was just excised from the record.
Is there any question why people don't trust the mainstream media? I mean, when you see this type of action on behalf of really supposed to be a storied media institution, CBS News, that they are really becoming the cheerleader for the left in the way they're reporting.
Well, it's not just, and I mean, CBS was the most recent in this story, but back in October, Mar-a-Lago was pressured to cancel two organizations that, like FRC, are falsely branded hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And Mar-a-Lago even decided to cave on one of these groups, canceling an Act for America event. And then the Center for Security Policy, luckily they did not cancel that one. But in both cases, the New York Times, the Palm Beach Post, and the Miami Herald just echoed SCLC talking points, not a single word about any of the scandals. I mean, this was a huge scandal that broke in March. But the SPLC just came back and said in April, oh, no, I think it was in May, their new president compared the SPLC to the Underground Railroad, as if there were no claims of any, you know, an organization accused of racial discrimination going out and saying they're the Underground Railroad. It doesn't get more hypocritical than that.
You know, what is fascinating to me, Tyler, is that you get the media that will go back decades to try to paint a negative picture of a conservative. But you have information that is weeks, months old on the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they don't even mention it.
Yeah, they think they don't have to. And they think they can make critics of the SPLC look dumb by quoting a small amount of their criticism of the SPLC and not including anything else. It's beyond the pale.
Tyler, great article. Thanks so much for joining us. I'll encourage people to take a look at it.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I actually have a book about the SPLC coming out early next year.
All right, well, we'll definitely have you on when that comes out to talk about it. All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, Drag Queen Story Hour in Texas included someone adjudicated for prostitution. That's next. Don't go away. News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council.
A lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, folks, we do have, as we come up to the end of the year, we've had a generous donor that has put forward a challenge match for FRC, $1 million challenge match by a handful of our donors. And if you'd like to support us, stand with us, partner with us, so Washington Watch continues and the work for faith, family, and freedom continues here in our nation's capital, give our folks a call. They're standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Or go to TonyPerkins.com. By the way, let me remind you, Stand Courageous Men's Conference is going to be coming to cities across America in the next 12 months. Our first one taking place January the 10th and the 11th in Baton Rouge, my home city. Jefferson Baptist Church. To find out more how you can be a part of that, go to TonyPerkins.com, click on the episode resources, or just go to StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com, men's conference. It is a briefing that you will not want to miss. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, a public records request reveals a school in Texas knowingly allowed a drag queen adjudicated for prostitution to participate in one of these drag queen story hours. Here to talk about it, Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values. Jonathan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Tony.
All right, so tell our listeners what you found out. You initiated a public records request. You tracked down this information. Tell our listeners what you found out.
Well, absolutely. So the way our state law works and in other states, you know, anyone can make a Public Information Act request, but it's something that our organization does from time to time when we feel like the government is withholding information or not telling the whole story about what's going on. And this came to our attention because a lot of parents and people in the community were concerned in Austin ISD, which is the capital city. It's also where our office is located. We found out there was a drag queen at a public school. And it was during Pride Month. There was a lot of activities in the school district. But there was information about this particular drag queen that seemed to suggest or confirm that he had a criminal record. And so we sent a request to the school district. And number one, trying to find out the actual name. Because if you go to a public school, you've got to submit typically your driver's license. And all the stuff on the website from the school district was going by what appears to be the stage name of this individual, Miss Kitty Litter, ATX. And this is in Blackshear Elementary in Austin ISD. So we sent in a request to find out more information about this visit that this individual had. And come to find out, this gentleman himself, or this individual, however he characterized himself, he sent a text message to one of the school employees. There was an email exchange that we were able to uncover where he says that he wasn't so sure that he would be qualified or that he'd get disqualified from being at the school because he had a criminal record for prostitution. And he said, and I quote, "So the guidelines for submission automatically disqualify me if the deferred adjudication for prostitution is considered conviction. So I don't know if ethical to submit." That is what this drag queen said. And still, he was admitted to the public school, and he was there for quite a bit of time during the day.
So what do we know? What age group are we talking about here that were exposed to this drag queen who had been arrested and convicted of prostitution?
Well, I don't know if we've got the details yet of the exact range, but this is an elementary school. So you've got, you know, students from kindergarten through fifth grade potentially that were exposed to this individual. And, you know, I think there's still a lot of information to uncover. But from what we could also find out in the Public Information Act request, that he arrived at 7:25 in the morning and stayed until after 2 o'clock when it appeared that the scheduling of the reading was only supposed to be at 11 a.m. And so he spent just about the whole entire school day at the school as well.
So what type of books was he reading to these elementary school students?
Well, as you might imagine, these were LGBTQ-affirming books, if you will. One's called Julian is a Mermaid. The other one is Red, a Crayon Story. And, you know, I know specifically those books were read to 12-year-old students. And there were parents that complained about it and concerned. I think there was one student that was allowed to opt out, if you will, from having to be a part of this particular incident and event, if you will. And so, you know, it's clear when someone like this is on campus, they have an agenda to push. It's not just as if they're reading, you know, some classic or traditional book in the public library. They're there to advance the LGBTQ and transgender agenda.
So, Jonathan Sines, what's the next steps here? I mean, you've got this documentation, this evidence that he, in fact, communicated with the librarian at the school. Roger Grape said that, you know, hey, look, I'm not sure that I'm qualified. I might get disqualified because I've been, if they consider a deferred adjudication for prostitution is considered conviction, I don't think I can come on campus. The no evidence to suggest the librarian tried to stop him or alerted anyone. It appears that the door was swung wide open for him to come in.
Yeah, well, look, you know, you have to follow the law, and you got to be accountable in the state of Texas, school districts too, to our state government. This is information we'll be bringing to the attention of our Texas Attorney General's office. We know that our Attorney General, Ken Paxton, has a strong record for standing up for the rule of law, and this issue will be treated no differently. So we're going to be doing some research to find out, you know, what the internal guidelines are and what they should be followed across all schools, but particularly in this school, and find out if there was any specific violation. We'll bring it to the attention of the Attorney General's office, also the lawmakers in our state. You know, we're not in session right now, but we will be soon, and we'll have elections coming up soon. And, you know, I think this is an issue that voters are going to care about. But we're in the middle of a big battle, too, in Austin ISD, where the school district is also trying to force some very concerning sex education onto public school students. And just another reason why I think parents in the Austin Independent School District are very upset, frustrated, and disappointed, to say the least, with their current members of the school board and a lot of problems that they're bringing to the public school right now.
Jonathan, one final question before I let you go. So folks don't think that, well, this is just, you know, things like this may happen from time to time. This is not an isolated incident. I mean, we're seeing a pattern that is emerging in the schools with this whole, you know, drag queen, transgender initiative.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can't help but feel like it's a coordinated effort going on around the country, certainly even in Texas. You know, and people can see what we'll be doing in the future at txvalues.org at our website. But our request also included a Public Information Act request in another school district where we found out there was a drag queen that was posing, if you will, as some type of cosmetology expert. He used his stage name, but then, you know, we were able to find out his real name, Jared Bridges. He goes by the stage name Lynn Adonis. He checked into a school just north of Austin, stayed there for 10 hours. I mean, it seems to be even longer than the regular school day. And so I think more parents are going to wonder
stay
what's
after
going
class.
On.
Yeah, maybe he wasn't too good of a student.
Yeah, you know, and so you have to wonder why the public school is allowing for this type of activity in this length of time. But we're going to stay on it. And, you know, we've had some success in Leander School District, a suburb of Austin, a public library. We were able to get a drag queen story time shut down. But these issues are popping up more. If people want to contact our office, I know they can do the same with your team. If they find these incidents to come up, contact our office, and we'll do what we can to get parents involved and hopefully put a stop to some of this.
All right, Travis Hine, thanks so much for joining us today, and keep up the great work there in the Lone Star State of Texas.
God bless you, and Merry Christmas, Tony.
All right, thank you. Merry Christmas to you as well. Jonathan Signs with Texas Values, one of the affiliated organizations that works with the Family Research Council. They do kind of what we do on the national level. They're one of the organizations that does that on the state level. I think we have, maybe, I don't know if we have it yet or not, but we'll have it up maybe tomorrow, and it'll be, might be in our update. If you don't get the update, go to TonyPerkins.com, sign up for the update. But we've got a resource available. We've been tracking these drag queen story hours across the country, and it is, as he pointed out, it is a coordinated effort, and we're seeing that, we're tracking it, and we've put together kind of a publication on that, and I'm looking. I don't think we have it on the website for today, but we may have it up there for tomorrow. But joining me now in studio with an update from Capitol Hill as to what's going on as we move toward the end of the year, a lot of initiatives underway to get funding bills through. Will they be done? Will we continue, have another continuing resolution, a short-term funding bill for government? Here with, I hope, answers is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. We do have a resource, do we not, that we'll have up on this drag queen?
We have been compiling the list, full list of where these events are around the country. And that's, you know, this is an important issue. And so we want folks to understand and know where these things are occurring. So we definitely intend to make that available to our
followers. One thing that happens when people stand up and draw attention to this, oftentimes the not in every case, but in many cases, especially when you're in conservative areas where they've kind of brought this in under the cover of darkness, you can shut it down just by raising awareness and drawing attention to it. So anyway, be sure and sign up for the Washington update, because we've got this kind of information. Also download the Stand Firm app, because we can send out information to you that way. All right, Travis, let's talk about what's happening on Capitol Hill. Yesterday we were talking about the Foreign Ops Bill, which funds a lot of government. There were some issues with that as it pertained to the life issue. What's the status there?
Tony, we continue to have conversations with folks to make sure that life is protected in this appropriations bill. We still have yet to see what's going to happen with it. We could see something in the next day or so. We've made our concerns very clear that we need to protect life in how the federal government spends its money. The State Foreign Ops Appropriations Bill is one way that we're going to do that. It's not the only concern in the appropriations process. The Labor HHS bill is one that we've been concerned about, with a lot of abortion money finding its way into that. We haven't been as focused on that because it's just taken a bit of a back burner here in terms of its chance of passage. But with the appropriations process kind of coming to a close before Christmas, there's a lot in flux, and we have indications from some appropriators that they think there's promise to, you know, come to agreement before Thursday and wrap everything into a big package of bills to get them passed. That may not happen. We may see some smaller packages passed, some CRs on other bills, or CR across the board. So we don't know, but folks need to know that we are doing our best hour by hour here to make sure that life is protected in these bills, because there are a lot of other groups looking out for their interests, but we at Family Research Council need to defend life and family and religious freedom in our work here.
And the best way, folks, to do that, as we advocate here, is to add your voice to the process. Right now the focus is on the U.S. Senate. You have two senators. And the best thing you could do is just call and encourage them through their offices to stand firm with the president's pro-life policies and not undermine them by funding pro-abortion groups or abortion entities. And you can call the switchboard for the Senate, which is 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And as Travis said, these things are being worked on as we speak. I've been talking with various ones on the Hill about various aspects of funding. And there's several, about a dozen, a little more, funding bills. Now, they're trying to get some of the bigger ones out. They're not going to get all of them. They're not going to get hardly any. They'll go into another continuing resolution, most likely to March. But they're trying to get some of these out. And that's why they're working on these compromise deals, give and take. But we need to be steadfast, firm in communicating that nothing that undermines the pro-life policies and initiatives of this administration should be supported and funded by Congress.
That's absolutely right, Tony. And, you know, as we look at the increasing divide between the parties on life, we see Republicans increasingly supporting great pro-life policies. There are all sorts of bills we are currently supporting in the House and Senate, pro-life bills, pro-life legislation. We need to continue to celebrate life and have our allies continue to vote and have good votes on the life issue. This is increasingly important as we go into the next year and look at the election a year from now.
What are the items taking place right now we need to be aware of?
We have some good news. The Senate now has confirmed the 50th Circuit Court judge that President Trump has nominated, Lawrence Van Dyke, a solid nominee of the Ninth Circuit. This is an hour or so before our program started here. We got news that they've voted to confirm him today. Great news to celebrate, something that Leader McConnell is doing a great job on, the Senate, to confirm President Trump's nominees. This is really great work. And we've also got word that but continue to have conversations with the Hill as we look at issues we've dealt with in the past, fixes to the Johnson Amendment, fixes to lack of exemptions for churches, and transit benefits, parking lot tax for employees. These are issues we're looking at. We can have a fix near the end of the year to continue to try to do that. So that's something we're having conversations with folks over there, too.
Yeah, it's a challenging environment where you have the House controlled by Nancy Pelosi and in the Senate, the narrowest of margins by Republicans. So it's a challenging environment, but we are making some progress. Travis, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, thank you for joining us. And until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234.